Growing up in church, one of the delights of the Christmas season was always the Christmas play. And down through the years, I had a chance to portray a shepherd, one of the wise men, and then the last year, before I was too old to participate, they let me play Joseph, which was kind of the highlight of my acting career. I also remember when I was quite young, I had a collection of stuffed animals. And one of them was a dog, about the color of a yellow lab. And I remember my mom and brothers taking that dog, and they glued cotton balls all over that thing to make it a sheep. I'm not sure I ever got over that. Anyway, there's one part that I never got to play in the Christmas program, and that was the innkeeper. For whatever reason, the plays that I participated in, we never even had that as part of the story. Now, of course, if you watch A Charlie Brown Christmas, they don't miss it. In fact, they even have the innkeeper's wife. You remember had Pigpen was going to portray the innkeeper, and Frieda was afraid that all of his dust was going to take the curl out of her naturally curly hair. At any rate, the innkeeper is very much a part of the Christmas story. We see in Luke chapter 2, verse 7, Mary wrapped baby Jesus in cloths. Swaddling clothes was the King James version of that, and placed him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. And we're familiar with this scene from Singing Away in the Manger, the manger scenes that are in just about every house around Christmas time, and even in artistic depictions on canvas. Historian Paul Meyer points out that the Nativity has been the most familiar scene in the history of art. I didn't know that. But almost every artist that has ever come into prominence at one time or another, they paint the Nativity scene. And they've done this down through the ages. I don't want, though, that familiarity to rob this occasion of a powerful truth. Consider this. Practically speaking, during their stay in Bethlehem, Mary and Joseph were among the homeless. When he was born, Jesus was homeless too. What do we think of when we think of homeless people? Do we pity them as we pass by? Or how many of us think, you know, if they'd only get a job, they wouldn't have to live like this? Have you ever considered the fact that Jesus himself was homeless? And as I want to point out this evening, that is not confined only to the beginning of his earthly life. Clearly, Jesus was homeless at birth. Joseph and Mary left the town of Nazareth. They traveled some 70 miles down to Bethlehem so that Joseph could enroll in the Roman census. Now, perhaps Joseph left a little late from Nazareth, or maybe because of Mary's condition in her late pregnancy, they had to make more frequent stops, and they lost time because of that. Whatever the reason, when the exhausted couple arrived in Bethlehem, there was no room for them. This truth is captured in the Christmas carol, "Thou didst leave thy throne. Thou didst leave thy throne and thy kingly crown when thou camest to earth for me. But in Bethlehem's home there was found no room for thy holy nativity." Chuck Swindoll points out, ancient Near Eastern rules of hospitality required the local inhabitants to open their home to visitors. But the sheer numbers would have overwhelmed the poor people of Bethlehem very quickly. So Joseph and Mary would have sought out an inn. Thanks to the charming little children's pageants presented in churches each Christmas, we typically think of the inn as an ancient version of Motel 6, clean beds for folks on a budget. We imagine the hapless couple vainly wandering the streets of Bethlehem searching for a vacancy. In reality, back then, inns were seedy little establishments run by shady characters, and they offered only slightly better accommodations to sleeping out in the open streets. They were more like a truck stop than a motel, providing trade caravans modest room and board as well as relative safety from robbers. They were not the kind of place a man would want to take his wife and children, and definitely not the ideal place to give birth. Nevertheless, even those were filled to capacity. See, this picture of Joseph going door to door, desperately seeking shelter because Mary was in labor, it's always struck a poignant chord amid the joy surrounding the rest of the Christmas story. And the nameless innkeeper who refused them refuge is usually considered right up there or right down there, depending on how you look at it, next to Judas in the popular mind. But maybe it was he, or perhaps it was his sympathetic wife, that remembered the cave behind the inn where they kept the animals. And they opened it up to the hapless couple. The hills around Bethlehem are perforated with such caverns, and they're still used to shelter cattle and sheep to this day. This is probably closer to the truth than the wooden shed we generally see in modern manger scenes. Visitors today can go to the Church of the Nativity right outside of Bethlehem, and it is located in a cave. Now you might wonder, how did they know this was the site where Jesus was born? Well, in the second century, a little over 100 years after the birth of Jesus, early church father Justin Martyr identified this cave near the village as the place of Jesus' birth. I'm sure that people who lived in the area that remembered that strange event may have been able to identify which one it was. And then later, the Emperor Constantine constructed a church there about 326 AD. Now, it may or may not be the exact location, but it's certainly typical of the kind of place that it would have been. A very humble cave cut right out of the hillside. Now, Joseph, Mary, and baby Jesus didn't stay in the cave. We're told in Matthew that by the time the wise men arrived, they were in a house. So they didn't stay in that cave forever. But this wasn't the end of Jesus' experience with homelessness. I would suggest that throughout his earthly ministry, Jesus was homeless. He said in Matthew 8:20, "Foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head." Once he began his preaching ministry, he was constantly on the move. Throughout Galilee, up around Capernaum, he'd go down into Judea, sometimes through Samaria. He was constantly moving around. He never stayed in one place for very long, and he never owned a home. He was as a homeless stranger in the world his hands had made. I just have to insert this here. I can't understand how some of these knucklehead preachers on TV can claim Jesus was wealthy here on earth. That's a whole other sermon, but he never had even what we consider the basics for life, and that included a home. Now, I'm sure that folks probably opened their home for Jesus from time to time as he came through. I wonder, though, how many would have had room for 13 grown men. You think about that. It wasn't just Jesus. He had his 12 disciples that traveled with him everywhere. So to open up your home, it wasn't like, hey, I'll throw a sleeping bag on the rug in the front room. We're talking about a lot of guys. And when you opened your home to them, you didn't just give them a place to stay. You were expected to feed them too. So I'm not sure how many people even could have done that had they wanted to. When you get to the end of Jesus' life here on earth and his life and ministry, Luke 21:37 records this. "Each day Jesus taught at the temple, and each evening he went out to spend the night on the hill called the Mount of Olives." Now this is the week leading up to his arrest and crucifixion. He was staying just outside of Jerusalem, and each day he would go into the city and teach. But where did he spend his nights? Out in the open. He and the disciples camped out on the Mount of Olives. And I wonder if this wasn't typical throughout his earthly ministry, that he had no place to call his own, but they just camped out wherever they could. Jesus was even homeless in death, so to speak. After his crucifixion, we read in Matthew 27, verses 57 through 60. As evening approached, there came a rich man from Arimathea named Joseph, who had himself become a disciple of Jesus. Going to Pilate, he asked for Jesus' body, and Pilate ordered that it be given to him. Joseph took the body, wrapped it in a clean linen cloth, and placed it in his own tomb that he had cut out of the rock. Isn't it interesting how the birth and the death of Jesus mirror one another? When Jesus came to be born, he had no place to go. There was no room in the inn, so he was born in a cave, wrapped in strips of cloth. When he died, he didn't have a burial place of his own, so he was laid in a cave, wrapped in strips of cloth. Isn't it interesting how the two events mirror each other? Now, of course, his stay in that borrowed tomb was only temporary. Wouldn't have made much sense to go to the expense of buying a tomb that was only going to be used for 3 days. But it just brings home the point that from his death, from his birth, through his adult life until his death, Jesus was homeless. But the point I'd like to leave with us today, and perhaps the most relevant, is the fact that Jesus is still homeless. Oh yes, I know that he is in heaven at the right hand of the Father, preparing a place for those who trust in him. I'm not thinking of Jesus being homeless in a literal sense here, but in a figurative, though no less real sense. John Stott comments on the situation surrounding Christ's birth. It was symbolic of the rejection Jesus was later to experience. Even as we picture Joseph going from house to house, knocking on doors, seeking shelter, so we picture Jesus knocking on the hearts of people. Revelation 3:20 says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in, I will eat with him, and he with me. And yet how many turn him away because there's no room in their lives for him." Bruce Larson observes, "Let's not be so hard on the innkeeper. He represents most of us. He wasn't really a bad man, just a busy man." We can identify with that. In the season when we celebrate this birth, we get so busy with Christmas cards and Christmas presents, with year-end internal revenue matters, with shopping and cooking. There's no room in our lives for the most important guest of all. Like the innkeeper, we're not villains. We're just preoccupied and harried. Cruel, hard, evil people are not the only ones who turn Jesus away. Good, nice, kind people also leave Jesus on the outside. They're not all bad. They're just busy. Their souls are consumed with activity. Not necessarily sinful activity, just things to keep them busy. And at Christmas, people are especially busy with all of the shopping and the parties and the concerts and the various activities that are out there. And in the clutter of activity, many preoccupied people will miss the Son of God. Many years ago, Evie Tornquist recorded a Christmas album, and one of the songs was actually a combination of two songs. A more recent song combined with an older hymn. And those words are hauntingly true today. I'm going to read the words to you, and then after the message concludes, I'd like to play that song for you. It begins, "No room, only a manger of hay. No room, he is a stranger today. No room, he and his world turned away. No room, no room. Angels in heaven up yonder watch in amazement and wonder to see the Son of the Highest treated so. No room here in the hearts of mankind. No room, no cheery welcome to find. No room, surely this world is blind. No room." Have you any room for Jesus, he who bore your load of sin? As he knocks and asks admission, "Sinner, won't you let him in? Room for Jesus, King of glory. Hasten now, his word obey. Swing your heart's door widely open. Bid him enter while you may." May Jesus be a homeless Savior no longer. May we say in the words of the Christmas carol that we mentioned earlier, the chorus, "O come to my heart, Lord Jesus, there is room in my heart for thee." I'd like to play this song for you, and then we're going to close this evening by singing hymn number 89, the first verse of that.